and it's earned through trust. But here's the thing, vulnerability actually builds trust as well. So it's like, I know it's kind of this fine dance at times, or like, how do we find that happy little medium? And regardless, there's going to be a little bit of risk involved. There is, you know, that's why there's a little bit of fear about being vulnerable. We're worried that the person across the table might take what I'm saying out of context. You know, they might use it against me. They might change their opinion of me. I mean, there's all these things we start to think about in our minds, right? About why we shouldn't be vulnerable. What might happen? I mean, it's amazing how that anxious part of our brain can just create stuff. You know? And as someone that, you know, my entire life, I've dealt with feeling depressed or dealing with anxiety and social anxiety. So I can appreciate the mental health conversations in those two zones, or one place, if you will. It's all around the mind and brain chemistry. And but because of my lifestyle choices, my habits, it's allowed me to self-regulate and manage my mental health and my emotions way more effectively than I could do without.
This is Unconditioning, Discovering the Voice Within, with Whitney Ann Jenkins. Hello and welcome to the 69th episode of Unconditioning, Discovering the Voice Within, where I bring on guests and we talk about the inner authentic voice and the challenges and the rewards that come from following it. This week, I have with me Dai Manuel. Dai is a super dad, dating his wife with a lead by example way of living and a contagious personality. He's on a mission to positively impact 1 million role models around the globe to lead a functionally fit life through education, encouragement, and community. He is an award-winning digital thought leader and author, distinguished Toastmaster, keynote speaker, and TEDx speaker, a former founding partner and chief operating officer, chief marketing officer of a multi-million dollar retail company, and a sought-after lifestyle mentor and executive performance coach. He knows firsthand how challenging it can be to juggle life's responsibilities while prioritizing health and happiness. I had a really lovely time connecting with Dai on this conversation and hearing his story. He overcame his struggles and found a way to help others through theirs. And he isn't afraid to be vulnerable, which is a really beautiful thing. I'm really excited to introduce you to Dai. And I know that he'll have plenty of nuggets of wisdom for you here in this conversation. So enjoy.
What was the inspiration to start the podcast?
I was doing a lot of audiobooks because I'm a voice actor, and I had this, all the equipment and the microphone, and I was really tired of telling other people's stories. I was like, if I feel this way, then I need to give a platform for other people to kind of like share their stories. And I knew a lot of really fascinating people. And so I started there, and there we go.
So cool. What's been the highlight so far?
Oh my goodness. I feel like I've made some incredible connections with people like yourself, or just like meeting them and having like really deep and vulnerable conversations and developing relationships from there. So it's really fun.
That's great. I love hearing the sort of the origin stories, right? What gets people started down this path? It's because I know it's a lot of time, a lot of energy, a lot of resources go into creating these types of platforms or to capture these types of conversations and moments. So thank you for doing what you do, because man, takes a lot to do it, you know.
It does. But here we are.
I'm gonna follow your lead and looking forward to this. This will be great.
So one of the first things I like to ask my guests is, because you are a thought leader in creating and guiding people and leading them, like you had to go through a lot of experiences yourself in your life in order to get to that place. And so when is the first time that you realized that you had this inner guiding force inside of yourself and you felt like you recognized it and you were able to follow it?
Wow, that's a wonderful question. And, you know, I think we all have those moments where we just feel that spark ignite inside of us, right? Where it's just like, whoa, what was that? You know, and it's amazing, because when you feel that sense of joy and happiness, more importantly, fulfillment, it's incredible, right? And I remember very vividly the first time I really was aware of that. And you know, I work a lot in the health and wellness industry, so I've been doing that for almost 28 years, you know, my entire adult life and then some, and primarily working with people through change. And you know, change isn't easy, right? It's more than often very worth it, But the process of change isn't always the simplest for us, especially when we're trying to override certain belief systems, rewire our brains, but to create new lifestyle habits, to ultimately create new results or solutions for whatever might be ailing or challenging us. And I'm no stranger to this, because from the age of 9 to 14, you know, I was dealing with some mental health challenges based on a situation at home. You know, my parents ultimately separating and then divorcing. You know, I'm an 80s kid. Back in the mid 80s when this was happening, I'll tell you, there weren't any resources. You know, right, I couldn't go on the internet and type in, you know, just kids of divorced parents, you know, find groups or communities to connect with. And as a result, there was a lot of stigmas around divorce back then. Well, right now, you know, statistically speaking, if you look in North America especially, you know, there's more marriages that end in divorce than succeed in not being divorced. So it's a very interesting place to find ourselves. That's a whole nother commentary on the culture and the society side of things, but we won't go there right now. But, you know, so back then I was dealing with some challenges. I didn't know what to do. In fact, I was quite at a loss. And, you know, to be perfectly frank, I know I needed a, you know, when you learn something very quickly, you know, sort of this brain chemistry in our brain, you know, the way our brains work, certain foods, certain stimulus produce certain, you know, neurochemicals to interact, you know, and these neurotransmitters, hormones, basically, they go all over the place. And I learned really early on at like age 9 that, wow, if I eat certain types of foods, watch movies or play video games, I actually feel really good. And I lose track of time, and I find myself in this just like all those problems in my life. Well, they don't really matter right now, because all I have to do is focus on this moment and this feeling that I'm creating for myself by doing these actions. Of course, those reinforce themselves, you know, the more you do them. And fast forward 5 years of that being my primary lifestyle, my way of dealing with the overwhelm, my social anxiety, just all these other challenges, and my weight ballooned. To the point, you know, just before I turned 15, I was at the GP's office with my mom, and Dr. Quinn's like, Betty, yeah, your son died? He's morbidly obese. His BMI is like 46. Now, I had no idea what any of that stuff meant, but I knew how I felt, and I knew based on the tonality of how he was speaking to my mom, it wasn't a good thing, okay? Like, this is bad, you know? And it was a really hard place to be. You know, there was obviously at school, there was a bit of bullying. There's the snickering behind the back. There's just those stresses, you know, and I'm thankful that there was no internet and people didn't have smartphones with these high pixel cameras and video cameras on them, because I just feel for kids today, you know, as a father of 2 teenage daughters, as an example, like it's just, I'm amazed at how they can navigate the world, but this social media constant 24/7, right? This awareness and pressure, and it's remarkable. So I'm grateful that I didn't have to deal with all that, you know? But I was dealing with a lot of depression. I felt quite depressed, and that also would create a lot of ideations, you know, especially like, hey, wouldn't it be easier if I just didn't wake up tomorrow morning? Like, wouldn't it be nice? Wouldn't it be nice if I didn't have to think or feel this way? Of course, I would never act on it, but it doesn't mean I didn't have the thoughts. And the thoughts became more prominent. And as it became more prominent, I knew that, oh, I don't like this. I really don't like how I'm feeling. And at 15, I remember just breaking down one day, like literally like ugly crying, right? We know the ugly sobs, right? It's like Niagara Falls on the face, right? And it's just like, it was coming out, and it was so cathartic. Like it was just this release of 5 years of pressure, of self-doubt, self-ridicule, low self-opinion, like just that internal language that I used to sort of identify myself with, you know, like it was just like, no more. I just had to get it out. And in that moment, I remember coming out of the bathroom and I looked at my dad and I'm like, hey, I want to get healthy. I don't want to be like this anymore. And he just looked at me, he goes, how can I help? I know, I'm like, well, actually, Dad, I like to bike. Can we get me a bike? You know, I only had my kid's bike from like when I was like 6, 7 years old, right? And I wasn't active at all for those past 5 years. So I needed a new bike. And that afternoon, he took me out to get a new bike. And literally, we got home and I started riding it. within that first week, I went to the library. I got some books out on fitness and nutrition. I was like, I don't know what to do. And in fact, I feel intimidated to even ask anybody for help, but I know I can read, I can learn. My kids are like, Dad, why don't you just Google it? I'm like, your dad's older than Google, right? Like, smart ass kids. But regardless, I educated myself. And with knowledge, as the cliche goes, comes power, and it was this sort of self-advocacy I could now start to maintain. And it took a while, to sort of get into that groove. But within the first few weeks, what started as like, I could barely go 20 minutes on the bike without stopping. And that's on a very flat or downhill, right? Like, it's like, anything uphill is like, no, that's just too hard. But within a few weeks, I recognized that 20 minutes turned into 30 minutes, turned into 35, turned into 45. Eventually I worked myself up to an hour, sometimes more. And I loved how I was feeling.
Yeah.
The pants started to fit a little bit looser. I woke up with a smile in the mornings. I didn't feel groggy. And I could tie my shoes and I wouldn't be out of breath. Like, it's amazing these little things that we take for granted. Yeah, it was crazy, right? Just crazy. Yeah. Go ahead. What's your thoughts?
Just to kind of go full circle with it, because you said that you began like eating these foods and like playing mm-hmm. video games because it made you feel better. Yeah. And then coming around to like finding that something else made you feel even better than that. Mm. That's really aware for that age, like, because from 9 to 14 to like 15, like, that's tough for anyone. Oh, but
it's tough.
To be so aware is big.
Well, thank you. And the way I look at it too, and if I'm really honest, there was a lot of fear that was driving my decision and actions. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, it was me being more afraid of the idea of not changing than the idea of trying to figure out how to change. I mean, both are intimidating. Both weren't like, woo, I felt excited about, because it's change, right? And it means me doing something completely different than I've been doing up to that point. But the idea of not doing anything and the idea of like letting another 5 years go by the time I'm 20, where am I going to be? Well, I feel as good as I do right now at 15. And I had to be honest with myself. I was like, nah, I don't think so. I think it's only going to get worse. Mm-hmm. And that scared me. It did. It filled me with fear. And on a positive motivation, when we think about extrinsic motivations, motivations that are outside of us, I kind of wanted a girlfriend. Right? Like, I did. Full disclosure, I wanted a girlfriend. And years later, not until my 30s, I finally dealing with that sort of inner child and worked with a therapist, psychologist. And really, I know what I was screaming back then. I wanted somebody to want me. Right. I wanted somebody to see value in me, to tell me, Dad, you're enough, because I didn't believe I was.
Yeah.
And so, it took 5 years to get to that largest size that I got to, to that morbid obese state. And it took about 20 to 22 months to take it off. So just under 2 years to get rid of it all, to get to that place where I felt confident physically, but I also was able to say yes to more invitations, because all of a sudden this confidence started to grow in me. When that physical health starts to come, it's amazing how it impacts our mental health and our emotional health. Not always in the best ways at times, because again, I was still dealing with a lot of emotional sort of internal strife, but I learned how to start regulating much more effectively. Just there was less peaks and less valleys. It was more even keel. And I also know the nutrition played into that hugely. If we want to talk about that later, I can definitely elaborate. But so there it was, and here's the thing, to answer your question, that moment where you're like, whoa, maybe this is what I'm meant to be doing, for the rest of my life. Because at 17, a friend of my mom's came over to the house and she's like knocking on the back door, and I let her in. She's like, oh yeah, is your mom here? I'm like, yeah, she is. She's just out back, gardening. Just there's like a half a beat there where I'm like waiting for them to leave, her and her husband. And they just sort of stayed there for a second. They're like, well, actually, can we talk to you? I'm like, you want to talk to me? I mean, I'm 17 years old. You're like in your 40s. You're friends with my mom's, and you want to talk to me? Like, I instantly thought I was in trouble. I was like, what did I do on the weekend? I must have done something. I'm going to get reprimanded or in trouble. Well, they sat me down and they complimented me. They talked about the changes they noticed in me the last couple of years leading up to that point, how healthy I got, how my attitude had changed, just how I just I was just more vibrant. I was more connected. I was more present, but I also looked very different than I had. And they said, you know, we want to get a little healthier. Do you think you could help us?
Well, yeah.
Yeah. And at 17 years old, I'm like, no one asked me for help ever, you know, like, unless my mom's asking me to do chores around the house. But I mean, that was like the extent of help. Right. And I was like, well, you know, that inner voice is like, oh man, can I help these people? I don't know. I'm like, they want to get healthy. Well, I got healthy. I think I could help them. So I was like, yeah, I can help. Yeah. And that's what started that process. And as I started to help them, I just felt so fulfilled, you know. I was like, whoa, this makes me feel so good, you know. And that's why it just continued. Literally from that point on, I knew for the rest of my life, at some level or another, I'd be coaching and mentoring people through change. You know, what started as physical health changes, it quickly evolved into changes in other areas of life and business, you know, personally and professionally, because it's all intertwined anyways. And that's sort of what got me started, you know, and still today, I still do it. You know, I still help people with change. And I don't ever foresee myself ever not doing that, you know?
Yeah, I want to bring up a moment that you were talking about of you having that release and then wanting mm-hmm. to speak with mm-hmm. your father. That took a lot of courage to be like, hey, I want to change my life. Like, I don't want to do this anymore. So that was very courageous of you to be able to admit mm-hmm. that.
Thank you. Well, it's interesting when we find ourselves at rock bottom, or as I always say, I think I was under the rock, you know, but we'll do certain things when you get to that place, you know, and for me, just because to be fair, and I think a lot of us can experience this, you know, anybody who's watching, listening to this, you probably relate to this, but, you know, I think, you know, if we actually think back to some of the times when we overcome big challenges, right, our own big changes, like often people in our lives, those that love us unconditionally, they often can be quite encouraging and often inviting us to start changes earlier than sometimes we're ready to make them. And depending on where we're at mentally and emotionally, that can either be taken one of two ways. Positively or negatively, right? And sometimes we feel like, so you're telling me, like, my parents would come to me and they'd offer, my mom was a registered nurse, so she had a lot of friends in the health industry, you know, in the health space, and nutritionist, dietitian. So she was always offering, hey, you know, my friend Sue can help you out. Maybe we can create a little meal plan so you can lose some weight, you know. And I know that they were just thinking, my boy's sad, we want to make him happy, this will help him. But I'll tell you, at 14, 15 years old, I'm like, you just don't think I'm good enough the way I am. Like, that's where I was. And that's where I felt, I mean, I felt like people were constantly judging me. And so anybody coming to ask for help, I just figured it's because you don't think I'm good the way I am. You want me to change, you know? And so there was this natural resistance to wanting to change, even though I did want to change. It's the weirdest thing, right? And I see this repeated. It's not just the fact that I was a teenage brain. This is common for all sorts of folks. You know, I still find myself occasionally doing this in my mind, right? You play like the mental pickleball, you're bouncing the ball back and forth, and it's just like, what's going on, right? And it was kind of them to want to offer that. But the day that I came out of that washroom after that cathartic sob, it was me asking for help to make the change because I wanted to make the change for me.
You were ready, yeah.
I was ready. I was ready to make some changes. I had no idea what I was going to do. And that intimidated me, but I was like, anything can be better than now and how I'm feeling right now, you know? So, and the nice thing about fitness and health changes, they are instant. Like immediately, as soon as you start making those changes, you will start to feel better. And that in itself creates this additional pull to want to keep going. But the thing is, we got to get started. And there's often some resistance and barriers there, right? But yeah, that was a big part of it. And, you know, I was finally ready to make some changes. And I imagine a lot of people probably here nodding right now, like, oh yeah, I get that, you know?
Yeah, so at 17, someone validated like the work that you had done by asking advice and who were older than you. So where did that go from there? Like, how did you integrate that into your life?
Yeah, well, I was always doing it just for passion, like, and just because I enjoyed it, it made me feel so good. I never really charged for it, which, you know, led to some challenges later in life, more so from the standpoint, I was I found it difficult to create the bridge, you know, to make this into a vocation that could pay me, because at times I just wanted to help people. And I still do. And to a detriment, right? Where it's like, well, I can't help myself and my family if I don't earn an income to continue helping more people and making a greater impact. And so I had to work through that process of really trying to get out of my own way, you know? But I did lots of different things, but most of it was all individual because I'd never played team sports. In fact, I was always the last guy, and often I would have an excuse why not to participate in phys ed or after school sports, because I didn't feel good about myself. I didn't want to be around people, you know, let alone be there to have people make fun of me like they would. So I avoided team sports. But as I got healthier, I started to do more individualized sports. I got into rock climbing. I got into martial arts. You know, later in life, in my 20s, I got into golfing, you know, like, so I tend to gravitate to all these individual things. And I loved it. I absolutely loved it because it was different ways of challenging myself. And eventually I got into personal training. I started with that and coaching martial arts for kids as well, like Taekwondo and kickboxing particularly. And so I did that into my early 20s. And then I got an opportunity to sell fitness equipment. And it was a performance-based pay structure, which I'd never been familiar with. You know, I was like, wait a minute, I don't just get an hourly rate here? You know, like, so wait. The more people I help get healthy and fit with all these cool toys in this retail store, you're going to pay me more? And they're like, yes. And I'm like, where do I sign up? You know? And all of a sudden, I realized that that power of serving larger audiences, but also where performance now offered me an opportunity where I could make more money than I ever imagined I could in this industry at the given time, based on my knowledge, you know, at that period in my life. And I loved it, you know, I really enjoyed it. And it provided for my family and I, especially as I was just starting to have kids in my mid 20s with my wife, who was in her early 20s at that time. And so we had kids young, and I excelled into management very quickly, but I was able to help people, but I was still coaching and mentoring, but never charging for it.
Right.
I'd be like, hey, if you buy equipment from me, don't worry, I'll continue to support you. I'll help you. I'll give you some programming. I'll give you some prompts. I'll coach you. And it might not be direct one-on-one all the time, but I can support you regardless. And so that became a big part of what I did. And eventually, you know, co-founded a company, expanded that. We grew to 8 figures a year. And I did that for 17 years. And eventually got to a place where I just wasn't feeling fulfilled anymore by that. And I wanted to make some changes. And that was 8 years ago, made a big change and literally just changed my professional trajectory entirely. But that might come out in the wash in a little bit.
Yeah, I think it's a very common thing for like healers, which you are, to claim the value that they have and give and receive equally. I think that's a very common thing. Mm. But you seemed to have been able to find the value within yourself. But that like also goes back to like when you were saying about being a teenager of like feeling that you weren't enough. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah. And there's still times, you know, like I remember because here's the thing. I went from that sort of idea of food, video games and movies being able to give me those little dopamine spikes and give me those momentary escapes, if you will, from life. And some of the pressures and the stresses and the anxieties and just like, oh gosh, I'm going to unplug from everything and plug into this distraction. Right. And what ended up happening was I still felt emotionally and mentally like that obese kid, even as I went into my late teens and early 20s. And I remember being introduced to alcohol. Mm-hmm. And I realized really quickly, if I had 2 or 3 drinks, I was very different. In fact, people liked interacting with me. I'd get invited to go out and party and go to different events. And I had dates, you know, I had girlfriends. I was like, well, oh man, this is like, wow, I should probably drink more often, you know? And that quite literally became a normal thing. For 15 years of my life, alcohol was very prominent, to the point where it really started to have a negative impact, not only personally, but professionally as well. And you know, by age 32, I realized, yeah, this is not healthy and some big changes need to happen, like big time, you know, or I'm going to lose not only my family, but most likely my business as well. And that's, you know, about 18 months ago, I did a TEDx talk and really spoke about this moment in my life, you know, where I really did have to learn how to ask for help because I didn't know how to do it on my own. And it was hard, like so hard, you know? And maybe we want to dive into that in a second, but yeah, that was sort of that, you know, I don't want to paint a picture like everything got great as soon as I lost all that weight as a teen. It was like, no. I changed the outside, but I really didn't do anything on the internal. Right. And so, yeah.
That will creep in if you would
tell me. Oh man, does it ever. And when it creeps in, it's like, we're here to stay. You got to do something if you want us out, you know? And it took some work to evict that feeling, those underlying beliefs for sure. Mm-hmm.
Yes. So it seems like you have a lot of pivotal moments in your life, mm-hmm. where like something happens and it like puts you on this trajectory and then something else happens. So mm-hmm. what was that moment? Like, I watched your TED talk, but for mm-hmm. the audience, like what was mm-hmm. the moment that pivoted you to like address the alcohol thing and make those changes?
Well, thanks for asking. It's there was a specific moment where my wife asked me the most impactful, clarifying question I've ever been asked in my life. And before I share that, let me give you some context to that. Okay. So my habit, like habitual habit, was, well, I'm going to take my staff out. You know, I've got to meet a supplier who's in town. I got to go to a trade show or a conference to go buy or source product or make deals happen. And alcohol was always there. Right. So it was easy for me to justify the action, right? Because I was doing this to build my business and supply and support my family and the communities and the teams. And so this is a big reason why I do this, you know, like just to justify the action, right? Because as if I believe that without the alcohol, that couldn't happen, you know, like it really, when I look on it, hindsight's never 2020, by the way, but when I look back on it, it's like, just some of these ways that I would justify it. And it just became a very normal thing. And often I would take the teams out, you know, celebrate a great month, you know, one of the stores hit some targets. So I take them out for dinner, you know, and I would continue to buy rounds just because it would give me permission to have another drink.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like everybody still got like half a drink, but I'm like, I'm done mine. I'm going to order another one, but I don't want to be just the one that keeps ordering. I'll order a round for everybody. That way I get mine. So I had all these ways of sort of doing it, but with make myself feel better in the decision. So it's like, I always knew that it wasn't aligned with a lot of my values, but yet I did it anyways, which created a lot of internal strife and conflict. And you know, you can bury that and distract yourself from that, but eventually it will rear its ugly head and start to make certain areas in your life less ruly, as well as start to really push back. You know, and that's where I found myself, you know, at 32 years old. It was just so regular. And I remember coming home one night after an all night bender. And actually, to be fair, I don't remember how I got home, but I got dropped off by somebody. And in fact, I woke up the next morning beside my bed, not in my bed, on the floor. And it wasn't morning, actually, it was slightly afternoon. But, you know, it was one of those days, very par for the course. And I made my way to the kitchen and my wife was there and she was, let me put it this way. My wife's been my best supporter, my best friend, my best business partner. Like we've really cultivated a beautiful life together, plus two beautiful children together, you know, and we've been happily dating for 23 years, but there's some gray years in there where I wasn't doing us any services, you know, and any good stuff. And it was often when I was drinking, you know, just, I was fun to be around, but I wasn't always present. I'd be distracted, you know? And so both of our kids, our daughters were under the age of 6 at this time. So they don't really have much recollection of this at all, other than what we've told them. And especially when they heard my TED talk, you know, like, and now they're like, whoa, how that happened? Wow, we had no idea, Dad. I was like, well, yeah, it's not like something I was planning to tell you every day, you know, like just whatever, it came out. But it was amazing when I was able to share that with them. But it came down and my wife looked at me and she's always had this way to look at me. And I hope everyone's got somebody like this in their lives. Someone that can look at you and they see the potential that you can't see in yourself. And they do everything that they can to not only build you up, but to tease out of you that potential that they know is in there. Yeah. She's been that for me ever since I met her. But that morning, coming downstairs, that look was no longer there. In fact, it was the opposite. You know, it was this sort of disdain and disgust and just this frustration. Like, you did it again. We talked about this, but you did it again. And I would always just ask for forgiveness rather than ask for permission. You know, I was the guy that would chronically, oh, my cell phone died. And it was just me turning it off, right? So I could, oh, I lost track of time, you know, like whatever. I mean, I had every excuse in the book. I was a sales guy, right? So I could sell this, you know, like just, it's so funny when I think back, I'm like, man, what was I doing? What an idiot. But anyways, she sat me down. She sat me down at the table and we started to talk what life was going to look like now, us co-parenting our kids and living in different places. Like it was like right to that conversation, right? There was like no warming up. It was like, obviously she'd been thinking about this a lot and for quite a while. And so, you know, sat me down and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is happening. I don't want this, you know, I don't want this. And this incredible overwhelm starts to happen, right? This anxious feeling like, oh my gosh, what this is, I don't know if I can handle this. And, you know, so we continued the talk and we got to a place, you know, obviously both of us shedding tears because she didn't really want that, nor did I. But she got to a place where she asked me a question. Oh, and here's the question. All right. So anyway, I mean, like, this is the one to write down. Okay. Like the one question I invite everybody, you might have to rephrase it or give yourself a little bit different context around it. But I feel the question works for everyone to some level. But my wife asked me, are you being the type of man that you would want to marry your daughters? Mm-hmm. And in a split second, I found myself thinking about it and I was like, hell no. You know, if a guy like me at that time showed up at my door, I wouldn't let them in.
Yeah.
I wouldn't. I wouldn't allow them in to be close or even get close to the three most important women in my life at that time. And it was like a lightning bolt hit me. You know, I was like, holy smokes, what am I doing? This is crazy. I can't believe I'm finding myself in this situation, you know, and I'm going to lose it all. And really all that matters are these three women in my life, you know, these two little girls and my wife. Like that's really all that matters at this moment. And right then and there, I made a decision to go 1 year without drinking. Now, I know there's people out there listening thinking, yeah, it sounds like you had some serious drinking problems. 1 year? I mean, come on. Well, I really believed, you know, at that point in time that 1 year was a huge commitment because I'd only ever done like a 1 month where, you know, like you do a sober January or something like that. Like I'd only ever done 1 month sober in those 15 years. That's how chronic the habit was. And so here I was committing to a year. I said it to my wife, you know, I had her on the couch. The two girls are looking up at me. And I mean, they're sort of looking around me, trying to watch Dora, the explorer that's on the TV. And they're not really paying attention to me. You know, they're sort of back and forth, like, Dad, get out of the way, you know? I let them know this. And you know, my one daughter, Chardonnay, she looks up and she goes, okay, so no pop, no tea, no coffee. And I'm like, no, Dad's going to have no adult drinks for a year. You know, like, it's funny how kids have that just ability to be so innocent. And it was nice because in that moment we had a little bit of brevity, you know, a little bit of laughter. My wife and I actually smiled at one another thinking, geez, this is great. You know, like how simple things can be. And then I got to work. I literally made a commitment right then and there, 1 year, no drinking, started to make some changes. But within a few weeks, I realized, wow, this is way harder than I thought it was going to be. Way harder. And I remember it got to a point where I was so anxious and so overwhelmed with everything. And all I wanted to do was have a drink. And I remember that night breaking down with my wife on the couch and telling her everything I was feeling. Everything I was saying to myself inside my head. And in our relationship, we'd been together for 10 years at that point. I'd never been that open with her, ever, that vulnerable with her.
Okay.
She let me go. She just let, and I swear, it felt like forever. I just kept talking and talking and talking and a little bit of tears, but just kept talking and just like, bleh, everything came out. And at the end of that, she just looked at me and she said, thank you. and I think you should talk to somebody. I laugh at that now because I'm like, she's right. I mean, that was the best answer she could have said, you know. And she empathized and she reminded me things are going to be okay. We're together. We'll get through this, you know. But I think you should talk to somebody. And I thought I was talking to somebody. I was talking to you. And she's like, well, I can't, you know. And she can't be that for me. She can't be my therapist. She can't be my psychologist. She can't, you know. She's my life partner. She's not all those other things. And as much as I may have wanted her to be, because that would have been way easier than going out and admitting openly that I need help and some support outside of this tight little circle. But I did, you know, and I went 6 months all in on that inner work, like all in, you know, and you hear about people doing this, right? It's like whenever I get a physical injury, and I've had many of those in my life, I treat the injury like a new sport. My focus is to get that injury healed and get back to functioning. And I sort of take that approach to anything in my life. Like I treat the change like the number one thing that has to be focused on right now. And I think that's what's allowed me to navigate change quickly and effectively, you know, because I give it the attention it's due, you know, and give myself the space to get through that level of uncomfortableness that comes with all that change. And believe me, there's a lot of it. Okay. A lot of it. And so 6 months all in, a psychologist, a relationships counselor, that after our second session, she's looking at Christy and I on the couch and she's like, Christy, I think Di should come back in the zone. it was awesome. All right. I laugh at it now, but this is like 15 years ago. Right. And we got to the end of that first year. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on this and sort of wrap up this story. But after that first year, you know, Christy and I are looking at each other. She's like, wow, you did it. And I'm like, I did do it. Wow, I did it. I did a whole year, you know, like we've been together 10 years. She'd never seen that. She'd seen me do that sober month, but never. I don't think either of us really thought it was going to happen. I'm just being honest, right? Like I don't. And yet it did. And she's like, hey. Tonight, should we celebrate, share some Chardonnay and watch the sunset, have some dinner on the porch? And I'm like, that sounds so good. You know, that sounds really, really good. That really nice. But then I thought about the year and I'd been reflecting on the year and all the things that had changed. Like my business improved drastically. My level of leadership was at a level I'd never experienced in my life. That inner confidence I had, my health, you know, all these changes had started to evolve in my life. And I never felt so fulfilled at any point. Those first 32 years, I never felt as good as I did after that first year of not drinking, at least to my recollection. And I looked at Christy, I'm like, you know what, babe? There's been so much good stuff that's happened in 1 year. What if I just kept going? Well, you know, we just celebrated 14 years, you know, since my last drink. Like it's become a lifestyle, you know, like it's just is what it is. And I'm not saying that maybe I will have a drink one day, but it's not today. And I really have no desire to do it. You know, like I feel so good and things are going great. But I also learned how to have a lot of fun without that need of alcohol because I got myself to a better place where I liked me. You know, I like who I am. I like who I am as a sober guy, not drunk fun guy die, right? That everybody called me. And so, yeah, that's sort of that big shift that happened 15 years ago. And again, it put everything on a different path. It's amazing when we have these milestone moments, right? It's like we go left or right at this milestone and we make a decision and we choose, and then we got to deal with that decision, you know, and really give it our all. Mm-hmm. And that's what I mean by going all in on the change. Yeah. Which I did. And so, yeah. And I'm very grateful to have had that opportunity, and thank you for the opportunity to share it.
Absolutely. There's so many things. There's so many places that I want to go because there's so much within that. Because like the moment you're talking about with your wife, where she's like, where things were tenuous and like divorce was being juggled around, like that takes you back to that moment in your childhood, kind of like started of like you going through that difficult time, triggering traumatic moment. And then you educating yourself with these books to like try to change yourself externally. And this time you're like really like going and doing the inner work. And so like how that has changed your external life too, it's like holistically. That's really good.
Thank you. Yeah, it took me a while to really wrap my head around sort of the process. Do you know what I mean? Like, and also I had to get out of my own way. And what I mean by that is there's, you know, we all learn through two different methods. We learn. Like, if we think about how do we learn, it's usually mentorship and modeling. You know, we model, we see somebody do something, they show us how to do something, we see a video showing us how to do something, then we too then go try to do it. Mentorship is like not only that, but also we're getting this feedback from people that maybe have already done it or achieved a certain thing or have a certain experience or expertise, and they themselves are able to turn around and look at us that are on the same path and saying, hey, whoa, 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 there's a little hole there, watch it, watch your step. I tripped in that last week, oops. At least I can help you avoid that this week. And you know, so modeling and mentorship are very prevalent in how we learn and grow and evolve as people, as a species, period. And when I think back to who some of my models were, role models that were modeling certain habits and beliefs and just actions or inaction, as well as some of the mentors I had early on, there's no wonder why I found myself believing that vulnerability was a weakness and asking for help was a weakness.
Yeah.
You know, that was the normal. Like, we don't talk about that stuff. Do you show emotions? No. The only emotion that you're comfortable to show in a group is being cool hand Luke, nice and stoic, or angry like Hulk, right? Like, it's like, that was it. That's what we modeled. We modeled cool. We're cool guys hanging out, chilling. Or really angry. Like, there was like no in between, right? Like, it was just weird. But that's what was modeled. So, of course, that's where I found myself wanting to do those things because it was just normal for me. And I think that's where the inner work piece, you know, getting to that place where I knew I needed help and recognizing as I got through the process, man, asking for help, why didn't I do this way sooner? Mm-hmm. And that's really, it reshifted, or I should say it shifted and recalibrated what I believed vulnerability meant.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and it was so important. And it's why it's a big thing that I talk about nowadays, because I really believe everybody, it's not a man thing, it's not a woman thing, it's a human thing. All right. It's like vulnerability is just, again, a skill that any of us can develop. But we have to ask ourselves, you know, what is my belief around vulnerability first and foremost? And why do I have that belief? Who's instilled that into me? And is that correct? Is that right? Does that feel right? You know, and then sort of go from there, that place of curiosity to then explore it in a safe, controlled or contained way as we develop ourselves to be more vulnerable, you know, not for the sake of saying, hey, look at me, I'm being vulnerable. It's not for getting attention. It's for bringing people closer together, helping people empathize and understand and connect and support. And it's awesome. You know, it's awesome.
Yeah. And I know that it is a human thing, but at the same time, there's so much pressure for men in this area.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like the juxtaposition, like in society right now is like fascinating of this is the way that you were raised and this is how you learned. And then people are expecting you to like just be able to be a completely other way. And I don't think that's fair either.
It's well said, you know, and it's true. But I like to think that, you know, these types of conversations like we're having right now, and these types of conversations are happening all over the place, right? Online and offline, and in big media and small media, like it's just on social, like we're seeing a lot more of it. And so I know some people calling it the woke movement. I mean, I'm like, I don't want to give it a label because I find with labels, there's always the, you know, labels intimidate people at times, right? Because it feels it peg holes it into one thing. And I'm looking at this as a skill like any other skill, you know, but it serves a purpose no matter where you find yourself in life. And it can be a wonderful purpose. It can unlock things for us so quickly. Because when I started to open up, and I'll just sort of share this little quick anecdote, but when I started opening up with some of my closer friends and what would soon become very, very close friends, you know, there's this new level of connection in our conversation. Mm-hmm. Because if you think about how do we get to know each other? We get to know each other often through story, through relating personal experiences. That in itself is an act of vulnerability. You know, especially when we talk about some of the big mistakes we've made in our lives and how it's moved us to where we are today. And often we think about some of these things that was a mistake, but really it was just a a redirect. You know, it was like, oh, okay. At least we hope that, right? We hope that we recognize that, oh, okay, I could have done that differently. Let me go this direction now and make sure that I apply what I learned from that experience, right? And as I started opening up about this, here's the crazy thing. Often the person on the other side of the table, the other side of the phone, you know, they're like, oh, wow, me too. I deal with the same thing, or I dealt with that, you know, 2 years ago. And I'm like, what? Really? I had no idea. Yeah, I never really talked about it. Like, so you've been dealing with this. I've been doing, I wonder how many other people out there are dealing with this too, you know? But we don't know if we don't open up about it. You know, we just don't know. And we feel we're alone in our struggles and in our suffering, right? And that no one will get me. No one will understand what I'm going through. Why not open up and try to find out if that's true or not? You know, and as soon as I started opening up, I started realizing, holy smokes, we're all in this together, you know, like this human experience is way more complicated than we like to make out, but it can be so much more simple.
Right.
You know, it can be so much more simple. And so, yeah, that's what I really took away from it. And I still struggle with being vulnerable at times. I do. It's like hardwired, right? Like I can't just undo 32 years of doing a certain thing in a matter of 10 or 15 years. Like I told you before, you know, I got really overweight in 5 years, but it took me about 2 years to take it off. You know, change can happen. It can happen quickly, but there's no guaranteed timeline around change. It just happens when it happens. You stay the course, right? You try what you're learning and you see how things improve and get better. If they don't, change a little bit more, you know, like it's this constant recalibrating. And vulnerability has been really powerful in my life ever since I made that decision to start to embrace it as a skill rather than fear it as a weakness, you know?
Because you were saying you were getting nervous sometimes still and feeling anxious about being vulnerable. But I think that just means that it's something that's really important to you, because if everyone was just like, you know, walking around being completely open, then it wouldn't be better either. So like boundaries are really important in like,
yes,
being able to like be vulnerable with the people that are worth being vulnerable with, I think.
You said that really well, you know, and I think Brene Brown says it in one of her talks, you know, where she says, you know, not everyone is deserving of your vulnerability. It is something that's earned and it's earned through trust. But here's the thing, vulnerability actually builds trust as well. So it's like, I know it's kind of this fine dance at times, or like, how do we find that happy little medium? And regardless, there's going to be a little bit of risk involved. There is, you know, that's why there's a little bit of fear about being vulnerable. We're worried that the person across the table might take what I'm saying out of context. You know, they might use it against me. They might change their opinion of me. I mean, there's all these things we start to think about in our minds, right? About why we shouldn't be vulnerable, what might happen. I mean, it's amazing how that anxious part of our brain can just create stuff, you know? And as someone that, you know, my entire life, I've dealt with feeling depressed or dealing with anxiety and social anxiety. So I can appreciate the mental health conversations in those two zones, or one place, if you will. It's all around the mind and brain chemistry. And, but because of my lifestyle choices, my habits, it's allowed me to self-regulate and manage my mental health and my emotions way more effectively than I could do without. I was saying to my wife the other day, I was like, man, I don't know how I would have navigated this if I didn't make some of those health changes that I did. Like what I think might be a down day, I'm like, man, this down day could be 20x if I didn't have the health resilience that I have today.
Right. Yeah. You know? You've also incorporated discipline into your life. Like we can't always be motivated. Like the discipline is like really important. So.
True enough. Yeah. I'm pretty disciplined. I'm not afraid to discipline myself, you know, and to hold myself accountable, but I still have days where I'll let myself off, you know, but I often just, I do have an ability of looking inwards and saying, you know, what do I feel like I really need today? You know, that peace inside me, like what's it really need right now? And it really doesn't want to go to the gym and work out, but you know what? I feel like going for a good walk, maybe going for a hike today, you know, going for a dip in the ocean, you know, like just it's recognizing that I don't have to always do things a certain way, but maybe just listening. What do I feel like I need today? yeah, I feel like a smoothie this morning. Yeah, I'm going to have one. You know, like, you know what I want for lunch? I want this. I want a big, healthy salad with some cedar plank salmon on it. You know, and it's funny because I'll invite my clients to do these types of habits, right? I've never had anybody send me a message and say, hey, Ty, you know that salad you asked me to have for lunch? No, it didn't work. Like, I've never had anybody tell me no. You know, it's like, hey, I know you said if I'm feeling down, maybe just go for a brisk walk or go to the gym, have a quick 20-minute sweat. I've never had someone message me after and go, yeah, it sucked. It didn't work. Like, because it does. It's instant, right? We feel better when we do positive things for ourselves, especially healthy things. We feel better. We do. And it's like right away, right? It's right away. It's like instant. And it's just a matter of that's where that discipline can help bridge that gap, right? From idea to action. Absolutely. And the more you practice it, that gap closes. It really does. It closes, you know, as someone that, listen, did nothing for like a good 5 years of his life, you know, to live in the life I live now. And, you know, it's not a closed gap. There's still a gap there, but it's a fraction of what it was. And that's available to anybody and everybody.
Yeah. I think also like what you were saying about like really listening to what you need and adhering to that, like it's building trust with yourself, because if you can't build trust with yourself, like if you can't trust yourself, then who can you trust? Like you can't count on yourself to give yourself what you need. Then it's a spiral into chaos.
Do you watch RuPaul? Do you ever watch RuPaul? Oh, okay. My daughter and I totally got into it during COVID, right? It was like our pandemic show together, my eldest daughter. And RuPaul has this saying, you know, if you can't love yourself, who can you love? Can I get an amen? Hey, yeah. Anyways, so when you said that, all I thought was RuPaul. Saying. Okay. Yeah. So I just thought it was perfectly timed. Anyways, well done.
All right. I'm keeping time. So I want to get you out on time. So
No worries.
Wrap everything up and like, what are you doing now with this vulnerability piece and like all the wisdom that you've gained? Like, how are you like now, like putting that out into the world?
Well, so there's a few things, you know, while my family and I, so when I decided to quit my career of 17 years, it's not like I could sell the company and retire. Okay. Like it wasn't that kind of profitability. It was also a down market, but I was like, I don't want to be here anymore. And so I got out, I took what I could, you know, used a lot of that money to finance self-publishing a book. I worked with a publisher, but I wanted to retain all the rights to my book. You know, like often when you do deals with publishers, they go own it, you know, like you get a royalty on it forever and ever, but they own it. And I was like, no, this is mine. You can't have it. So it was kind of a hybrid model. So we self-finance a lot of the things a publisher would do and yet still have the opportunity to be in the bookstores and distribution, et cetera. But so anyways, it's a different model. If anyone's curious about that, they can always send me a message. And I'm happy to make an introduction to my publisher. So we wrote this book and I left my career. A month after that, my wife left hers. 2 months after that, we pulled the kids out of school, gave away our stuff, packed up our SUV and started traveling with no real idea of how long or where we're going. Like we just sort of, it's crazy when I think back on it now, I'm like, wow, we were nuts, you know, like, wow. And we just started traveling and, you know, road schooling or life schooling our kids. We tried the homeschooling thing, but it was like, no, this isn't going to work. We'll figure something out later, you know? And I know there's probably some people thinking, wow, man, that's like, I had a message actually from somebody. It was like, that's a form of child abuse. I couldn't believe I got that Facebook messenger from somebody I knew. I was like, what are you talking about? You have no idea. Anyways, both my daughters, university, you know, like all that stuff. So education, it's all good. Don't worry about it. You know, like when kids want to learn, they'll learn. So we went traveling for 5 years and I had positioned myself. So I started coaching people, but through online. And of those 5 years of travels, we went to Bali for 3 months after about 2.5 years. And after those 3 months, we were looking at each other, we're like, hey, you know, we could kind of stay here for a bit. Really? Yeah. Yeah. I think we could. Turned into 2.5 years in Bali. Yeah. So it was wonderful. Great experience. Just a beautiful country to call home for a period. And during that time while I was there, I really recognized I didn't have a lot of very close male friends in my life. And statistically, if you look at the research out there, most men, especially as they hit 35 onward, they can count on one hand how many friends they would count as being very, very close, like people that they could actually be vulnerable with. And it's very often fewer than one or two, which I found absolutely startling. But also at the same time, I was like, that's very true. Cause I'm like, I'm not that guy. I'm that stat, you know, like I've got lots of male acquaintances and male friends, but not really. Like we're not opening up about the real stuff that we're working through. Right. And so I started thinking, well, I know I'm having this problem. I wonder how many other guys out there are also dealing with this sort of frustration. So put it out there. Next thing you know, a really good friend of mine, Nick Wood, who was also living in Bali, podcaster. He's from Toronto, the other side of Canada. So it was crazy. Here I am at a co-working space in Bali across the world. There's a dude sitting there and we just happened to hit it off and start talking. And I'm like, well, you're from Toronto? I'm from Vancouver. What? And it's like, here we are in Bali meeting each other. And he's a men's coach. And he does men's circles. And I was like, wow, I've never done any of that stuff before, but I was open to it. I'd try it. Anyway, so I took a lot of what he was doing and showing. And then I said, well, here's my idea. I want to do something a little bit different. It's not a men's circle, but it's a men's group. We're going to meet up once a week. We're going to have dinner and conversation every Monday. We'll call it Mentorship Mondays. Mentorship Mondays. Yes, yes, that was intentional. And the coolest thing was, within a matter of months, we were getting 20 to 30 guys showing up every Monday, all walks of life, like from 18 to 70 years old. We had the full spectrum and it was awesome. In fact, it still runs. They still meet in Bali every week, that group. We also started running during pandemic, several groups online. Nick continues to facilitate those. I got a little bit of Zoom burnout because so much of my businesses are run on Zoom that I needed to take a step back from Mentorship Mondays. And so I'm just about to start back up again, actually, in August. But I've had a break for a little bit because I needed less screen time in my life, you know? But I am also starting up another group here in Vancouver, you know, because we're through the pandemic now and now people are finally open to really creating communities again offline. And I love that. That's where I really thrive the most. You know, I love online too, but you know, connecting with people face to face in person, sharing that energy, looking at somebody across the table and connecting, nothing can emulate or replace that, you know? And so that's a lot of what I'm doing, more on the passion side of things. I still continue to compete in CrossFit. I compete in Spartan races. You know, I love that stuff that challenges me physically and mentally. I love, and I continue to write and produce content and coach and mentor people through change, you know, especially with the heavy, heavy weighted in nutrition, fitness and mindset, neuroconditioning and neural change. So that's what I continue to do and love, you know? And so, I always tell people, if you're ever want to have a conversation, just shoot me a tweet, shoot me a DM, or just find me on social and send me a message and be like, hey, this is what I'm changing right now. And, chances are I've got some resources I can share with you to help you along, you know? But thanks for asking that and allowing me the space to answer. That was really kind of you.
Sure. Yeah. Oh, no, I'll add all those links into the show notes of your socials and your website and everything so people can find you like real easy.
Thank you. Thank you. That's great. I love it. Just to commend you again, I know before we sort of hit record, I was mentioning, but I know how much energy goes into creating a platform like yours, a podcast like this. You know, the fact that you're allowing all of us to be little flies on the wall and listening in on these amazing conversations is just such a privilege and an honor. And I just want to say thank you. You know, thank you for putting this out in the world, because man, there's enough negativity out there. Yeah. And to see people like you doing something to offset that scale, it's so valuable and so needed. And so I just wanted to, again, just see you and say thank you, you know?
Well, thank you. Thank you for sharing your wisdom and your vulnerability. So I have one last question that I asked my guests.
Yeah.
Before we end, if your inner voice had a billboard, what would it say?
Well, there's a quote that I often say, and it's because it was so important to me. And it's not so much a mantra anymore, but it was something that felt like a mantra at times. And it's, if you can't change your friends, or the way I usually say it, I'm sort of paraphrasing, I'll say it the proper way. If you can't change the people around you, change the people around you. You know, and that is what's served me so well in my life in these big periods of change, because I've recognized here I am going through changes, and instantly I want to find all the people that are close to my life and them to change too along with me, because I know how good it can make them feel. But we have to recognize that change is often a personal journey. And as much as we want to see and we know that change can be good for those people that are closest to us, they may not be in a place where they want change. But you can't let that hold you back. But you have to be prepared to maybe change the association to a new group of people that are also motivated to make those changes as well. Because community is key in the change process. It is absolutely key. Because you're going to have days that you fall, days that you trip, days that you wake up thinking, I don't want to do this. But I'll tell you, if you got a community of other people that are going through the same thing, chances are they're going to be able to say, hey, we're waiting for you. Where are you at? You know, or hey, you tripped. Let me help you out. Yeah. And it's so critical, so powerful. So yeah, there's the billboard that would often go off my mind. Hey, if I can't change the people around me, I'm just going to change the people around me.
I love that so much.
Thank you. Great. It's a fun one.
Thank you so much again for
taking. Thank you. Absolute pleasure. I really appreciate it. And I can't wait to share this conversation with my communities and turn other audiences onto your podcast, because I think they really need to listen to this.
Yeah, they do. Okay.
Thank you so much for joining me this week. If you're listening and you like what you hear, please consider subscribing and rating this podcast, as it really helps get this podcast out to other people who might be interested in hearing it but don't know about it yet. And also, if you'd like to contact me or reach me, you can reach me at unconditioningpodcast@gmail.com or unconditioningpodcast on Instagram. Thank you so much, and until next time, stay tuned in to you.